You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Rayne Roberts. Don't forget to check out my holiday fantasy novella, Merry Happy Valkyrie, available from all good ebook sellers or directly from the 12th Planet Press website. Our current serial is Cabaret of Monsters, as is very appropriate for this, the month of Saturnalia. So I'm going to continue with my historical tidbits about the real Roman Saturnalia for you. So the gifts that were given for this midwinter festival of merriment and amusing and or awkward role swapping were usually small token gifts or jokes. So there's like a tradition of giving gag gifts. It's basically the whole, you know, workplace Secret Santa thing. It has its origins in the ancient Romans. Who knew? One of the other traditional gifts were the sigillaria, which are little figures made from wax or pottery. And scholars don't actually know whether these are supposed to be symbols of like symbolic human sacrifice or children's toys. I don't know. Can't they be both? Never mind the whole, if you're naughty, you get coal in your Christmas stocking. Imagine if it's like, ha, congratulations, you know, it's Saturnalia. Merry, happy, have a human sacrifice. Ah, Romans. Enjoy your chapter. Chapter 6. Livilla. Before Saturnalis. Nox. For a long time now, I've known that the sky will kill me. This city will kill me. I will die at the hands of our nameless enemy, or let's be honest, I will die at the hands of a man. I share my bed with monsters. Sooner or later, one of them will go too far and leave me in a crumpled heap on the floor. On the whole, I would prefer it to be the sky. Why not die a hero? One last cruel joke on a city that has never been kind to me. I never expected to be the theatre that killed me. I don't recall a state of innocence. Growing up in a theatre, even a backwater hall like the Mermaid back home, innocence was a luxury no one could afford. I spent my early years performing in the Cabaret of Monsters, a chorus of masked children, beloved in pantomimes and musettes. I wore many faces. It all depended which animal you snatched up on the day. I flitted between mouse, cat, gattopardo, rat, bird, felax, wolf. The wolf was my favourite. A moulded leather mask that smelled sometimes of peppermint, because it was also Raffaello's favourite, and he was the biggest, so he got his pick more often than not. Later, when he went off to train as a tumbler, I secured the wolf mask as my own. Being the wolf made me bigger too, made me strong. As the wolf, I could bite and dance and take as many helpings as I wanted for dinner. As a child, that was all I wanted from life. There were 10 of us, lambs in the cabaret, and we knew how good we had it. Not everyone was lucky enough to be kept on with the company once they were too old to wear the animal masks, so we learned to tumble and dance and sing in our spare time. We made friends with the grown-ups, treading that careful line between useful and ambitious. For the Dems, there was another risk hanging over our heads as we got older. No one wanted to capture the eye of the stage master. Now I'm on the roof with Poet, and he says those chilling words to me. You're not happy, Liv. And what am I supposed to make of that? Happy isn't a state I've thought much about in recent years. I've been fighting to survive. I'm part of another cabaret of monsters, now a real one. In the creature court, we shape ourselves into wild beasts and fight the sky to save the city. I have never been stronger than I am now. Lord of Wolves. I have my Cortese to adore and serve me. I share Garnet's bed when he summons me. I crawl in with Mars, Warlord, we call him Warlord now. And our pack, his Cortese and mine, together in a pile when I want to feel safe. I am beautiful. I have all the dresses I could ever need to wear, and my belly is always full of meat. What does happy even mean? I ask poet. I'm swaying now on the very edge of the cathedral. If I fell from this height, I would not die. I would burst apart into wolf shape and run to safety. I will not fall. Poet and I haven't been friends for years. Our Lord of Rats has been too busy, growing up into an elegant, dangerous stage master, perfecting his showman's face for a crowd of strangers. I've been keeping on Garnet's good side, so he never does to me what he did to others we loved. So I don't end up exiled or broken or bleeding out on the floor of the Haymarket. Lavilla, says Poet now, and his hands are cool on my waist as he draws me back from the edge. You can't go on like this. Your Cortese are fretting over you. Warlord is fretting. Even I'm fretting, and I don't give a damn whether you live or die. I laugh at that, foolish child. Back at you, I whisper. Poet turns his face into my neck, like he used to when he was little, and I was big enough to shield him from the cruelty of Tasha, Lord of Lions, who made us what we are. Garnet will notice eventually. You can't let him see any weakness. I'm not unhappy, I protest. I'm not. I don't feel anything. That's normal, isn't it? Please, for my sake, find something for yourself. For one market night, one festival. Let yourself be live again. That's a startling thought. It tastes like daylight. What do you have in mind? Poet smiles at that. He's not handsome, not really. A funny-looking boy. He grew up into a skinny young man with an odd face. He's beautiful in stage makeup and fine clothing. He uses his body as an instrument, and if he wants you to love him, you will. You can't help yourself. The theatre has eaten him alive in recent years, but he wears it well. It's Saturnalia, dearling, Poet croons. Everything is upside down and back to front. I want to take you off the street, put you back on the stage. What? I say, turning it into a joke. Are you going to make me a Stella, boy? You're already a Stella, Lavilla, Poet says to me, deadly serious. I won't make you anything, but first things first. I frown. What do you have in mind? He tugs on the long tail of my dark hair, forcing it out of its pearl clasp. A pretty trinket my Janvier gave me last Floralia. A new look for a new year, dearling. Haven't you heard? Long hair is for duchesses and old fogies. If you're going to stand on my stage, I need a good time dem with stars in her eyes and a song in her feet. I'm a wolf, not a flapper. Poet smirks at me. Can't you be both? I wore my hair short at the Mermaid, in the old days. It made me look younger, even when my legs sprouted and fellows started to look up my skirt. Ruby Red, my best friend backstage, had her eye on the Columbine line. She shared her rations with me, so she'd stay thin as a swan, and practiced her arches and stretches wherever the adults could see her. She grew her hair long, so she could wear it up in a crown of roses. We were both 11 when the company moved from our tiny fishing town to play a big city theatre in Harfleur. Ruby Red bounced with glee, thinking this was her big chance. She meant to be a Stella by the time she was 16. As for me, I had nowhere else to be. My brothers and cousins had never known what to do with me after Ma died, and the theatre was the best home I'd ever known. By the time it sank in that we weren't just visiting our Fleur, we were to stay. At the Vittorina Royale, as long as our shows sold tickets, well, by then, our Stella was dead, and the stage master already fucking the next one. He groped the Columbines openly and called any dem of the company to his office for a private chat any time he fancied. Everyone was at it. The tumblers, the masks, the songbirds, the stagehands. They were all half in love or lust with each other. The roles they played on stage fed into backstage drama and cheating, frantic frigging and face slapping and impulsive falling in and out of beds, like a game of musical chairs. In retrospect, this prepared me well for my life in the creature court. There was casual nudity too. No one turned a hair about where they got changed backstage, or any other kind of privacy. If you lived and worked at the Vittorina Royale, you knew all the gossip and you'd seen half of it happen right in front of you. They did their best, most of them, to protect the lambs from the drama and the fucking. One time, we had a stagehand who tried to touch up Kip behind the canvas door, and three tumblers went after him with a length of wood. While we were young enough to wear the animal masks, we were supposed to be safe. Once you graduated out of the Cabaret of Monsters, assuming you still had a job, you were fair game. I knew for a fact that Ruby Red spent 3 hours alone with the stage master before he promoted her to Columbine. She wasn't even 13 yet. "Make up your mind, Liv," she said once. Though she barely spoke to me at all anymore, now she was a Columbine and fancying herself something chronic. "Find a place for yourself or one day you'll wake up and you won't belong here." I wasn't good enough to be a songbird or dedicated enough to be a dancer. I could wear a mask well enough, although the parts for Dems were boring if you didn't sing and dance as well. I started to worry that I'd lose my place to someone younger, thirstier, more willing to sacrifice everything to be in the show. But I found a different thirst altogether. A whole new mask to wear. That was when everything changed. My hair falls to the ground in clumps. I haven't cried in years. This won't break me. Last Nox, I bled all over the grass of the gardens of Trajus Alessandra before the sentinels came to do their damned job and fix my wounds by offering their throats to my teeth. It's a black waterfall, hair sliding over my shoulders and hitting the ground in a swish. Poet perches on a bench nearby, watching with that critical eye of his. The barber, a seigneur's barber shop, what has my life become? Whistles between his teeth as he clips me raw. "What have you done?" I whisper. Poet leans in, eyes gleaming like he wants to ravish me, which is all kinds of disturbing. Possibly he just wants to ravish my new haircut. "Look at you," he crows. "The audience will eat you up." It occurs to me too late that Garnet might hate it. He's been erratic lately, our power and majesty. He can't stand feeling out of control, and here I am, turning myself into someone new, someone bold, a Dem who bobs her hair. "No regrets," Poet commands. "You say that," I snap back. "When has following you ever been a good idea?" He taps me on the nose. "Don't bite." If I went wolf, right here in the barber's chair, I could eat his throat out. He would taste delicious. Before he was Poet, our boy disappeared. He was still young enough to play the Cabaret of Monsters for a good few years, so it was odd, but we were living in a big city now. Perhaps he'd been murdered or sold to chimney sweeps. All our shows had songs about orphan boys who fell on their feet. No one was especially worried about him, except Kip, who cried for days. One day he came back, just when I needed him most, and led me a fine old dance to the creature court and our brand new life. Moonblood doesn't mean much, though many try to build it up as a milestone in a Dem's life. The first few spots I found in my linens filled me with terror because that was it. The beginning of the end. The Cabaret of Monsters wouldn't have me anymore if I was turning into a dame. Hiding away in shabby, oversized tunics didn't stop me being leered at or groped. It was time to accept a different sort of armor. Ruby Red helped me find the dress. A pretty floor-length thing, with rosebuds all over in cheap lace. In my memory, it was fringed at the knee, but that can't be right. That fashion didn't come in until later. You'll have to grow this out, she said, tugging on my dark curls. There was no time for that now, so she pinned a loose ribbon cap to my scalp, with false hair falling out the back. The gown was a deep lavender, and ruby red painted my face, like I was the Stella herself, not some scrap of a lamb hoping to make it as a songbird. He don't do much, Ruby Red assured me about the stage master. He's all fumble and jiggle, that one. He always finishes on the outside. Adrian, our Stella, was days away from giving birth, and so furious she had to be replaced for the Saturnalia pantomime that year. She was constantly screaming and hollering. It wasn't true about the stage master always finishing on the outside. A baby was always a possibility when men fumbled at you. It'll be over before you know it, and you'll have your place, Ruby Red said, giving me a sisterly hug. It was the nicest she'd been to me all year. You'll have your place. My stomach had cramped up all day, I thought from the moon blood, but it tightened and twisted all down my thighs to my ankles as I knocked on the door of the stage master's little office up above backstage. As soon as I stepped inside, I felt stupid, ugly. The cosmetic on my mouth tasted awful. The stage master looked at me like I was a child playing comedy dress-ups. "Hello, Liv," he said with a smirk. "I hear you want to be a songbird." He leaned back from the desk with a sigh, patting his knee. I saw how it was going to go in that instant, unwinding before me like a ribbon. I'd been so busy not thinking about what it meant to let him pour at me, to let him own me. He paid the coin. He provided the roof, and we followed his rules, filled his shows, entertained his audiences, made his theatre grand and fine and beautiful. I lifted my chin, forgetting about the dress and the cosmetic and everything else. I'd been in the chorus long enough. I could play a role if I had to, and the role I chose today was Lady Muck. "No," I told him. He humphed. "What? Think you can make it as a mask? Scrawny mutt like you. You haven't got the grunt to be for a Columbine. That takes a special something. Don't see you as a songbird either. No lung capacity." He made a crude gesture with his hands about how much he thought I had up top, which had nothing to do with my lungs. "So tell me, little Liv, how are you going to make yourself useful around here? Why the hells should I keep feeding you?" He eased a hand into his trousers, not taking his eyes off me. "I want your job," I told him. "I want to be stage master." He laughed at me, a big, wet, smacking laugh, and in that moment I was so furious at him that I growled. It was a deep, vicious sound from low in my belly, and it widened his eyes. For one brief moment, he looked scared of me. I liked that. But then he went red in the face and got to his feet. "If you won't pay your way, what use are you?" I didn't even see him pick up the chair, but I felt the pain as it crashed into me, knocking me to the floor. "What the fuck are you for?" he thundered. And hit me again. It hurt, but I liked it, because the pain fed my anger, and for the first time in my short, frustrating life, it felt like my anger was allowed. He hadn't bothered to button his trousers up. He was spilling out of them, and looked like hitting me did more for him than anything I might have done with my mouth. He cupped himself with a hand, made a few rough jerks like he was preparing for action. I didn't just growl this time. I roared. I thought about that leather mask, the one that always made me feel strong like a wolf. I got to my feet, body aching, and I howled at him. The stage master stumbled back, confused and startled. His hard-on sagged, and his hand fell to his side. "If you touch me, I will kill you," I said very calmly, and left the room. On the stairs, my legs shuddered as if I was about to collapse, but I couldn't let myself. Behind me, I heard something smash against the wall, like he was doing to the chair what he'd wanted to do to me. I ran and kept running down the stairs, out and out. My arms and legs hurt like the blazes, though I could barely feel the bruises. This was something else. My belly ached with hunger. I was angry and exhilarated, burning up as I scampered out to the alley behind the theatre. My muscles were on fire. No one had ever told me moonblood pains could be this bad. I hung onto the wall, heaving like I was about to throw up my guts. Something else happened instead. I shuddered and screamed and fell apart into wolf pups. "It's all right," Boy told me, when he found me later, before he took me to the creature court, to Tasha and Garnet and Ashel, before he changed my life forever. "Everything's going to be all right now, Liv. You're one of us. That means you have a pack, a family. It's better even than the theatre." I scoffed at him, even as my blood thrilled with the change, with the new power I'd found inside myself. What could be better than the theatre? "You'll never be lonely again," he promised me. And it was true enough at the time. "I am the Lord of Wolves, and I have a place in the creature court. I have my pack, my lovers, my cortesi. I fight a war against the sky every nox. I am powerful. I am beautiful. I am loved. I have never felt so lonely in all my life." Thanks for listening to Sheep Might Fly. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates. Follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly. Find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards, early ebooks, and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. See you next week.